Waiting is uncomfortable. I looked around while you all were waiting, and I noticed a couple of you looking at the person next to you, maybe wondering, is Mark having a stroke? Did he forget his sermon? Waiting is an uncomfortable feeling, and that feeling of waiting is where I want to begin, because waiting, especially waiting when you want God to do something, can be one of the most vexing and difficult spiritual experiences we have. I was talking to a friend about waiting this week, and he said, you know, the only problem with instant gratification is it takes too long. We're not good at waiting in this country. In the 1993 Super Bowl halftime show, Michael Jackson was apparently catapulted out onto the stage, launched onto the stage in front of 100 million viewers and spectators. He landed on the stage, and then he didn't move. He didn't do anything. 30 seconds passed, then 45, a minute passed. The crowd was roaring. Backstage, the director, Don Mischer, was panicking. He was screaming into his headset, come on, Michael, give us the cue. Come on, let's go. But Jackson stood there perfectly still, just waiting. You see, he understood something that the director didn't. He understood that the silence was the beginning. The waiting was an integral part of the show. Finally, his hands went up. He pulled off his glasses, and the show began. Everything exploded. It was the most watched halftime show to that point in Super Bowl history. And it was so impactful, in part, because of the waiting. In this gospel passage we read this morning, the one you may have been waiting to get to an end, but in this gospel passage, Jesus receives word that his friend Lazarus is sick. Mary and Martha send the message from Bethany, the one you love is ill. The implication is clear. Come, heal him. Get here. We need your help. But Jesus goes about his business. For 2 whole days, he waits before finally heading to Bethany. And by the time he gets there, Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. Now, in that culture, it was widely held that the soul kind of lingered near the body for 3 days after death. That means in the first 3 days, perhaps there was some hope left, some potential for revival. But by day 4, the soul was gone. It was over, final, irreversible, no chance. Martha sees Jesus walking into town, and she comes out to meet him on the road, and she doesn't hide her grief or her anger. She says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. In other words, where were you? Why did you make us wait? Jesus doesn't explain himself. He doesn't defend himself. He simply says, where have you laid him? And then he goes to the tomb of his friend, and he weeps. His grief was real. He suffers at the loss of his friend. And for us, this means when we are suffering, God is with us in our pain. God hasn't run away from us. I imagine that most of us have been in Martha's shoes at some point in our lives. Have you ever cried out, Lord, if only you'd been here? Have you ever prayed and prayed and prayed for help, but the only response was silence, was waiting? Last week, I took my son down to Legoland for a couple days, and I got talking to a young man who I met down there. He's in his 30s. He just moved with his wife down to Florida. He moved because she's 7 months pregnant, and they wanted to have family around. But in doing so, he left behind a stable job, and he's trying to start over. He told me that every morning he gets up and drives from job site to job site. He works in construction, looking people in the eye and asking for work. But it's a challenge for him because 17 years ago he made a mistake, a terrible mistake, and now he has a criminal record. And so far, every door has been closed in his face. Every day he comes back to his wife embarrassed, afraid for his child, living right now in his in-law's house. And then every Sunday morning he gets up and he goes to church, and he told me he prays, "Please God, please help someone give me a chance, just one second chance." And so far, nothing's worked. Nothing's happened for him that he can see. Just silence, just waiting. To understand the Old Testament passage we read today, you need to know what was going on around Ezekiel. God has brought him out into this valley of very dry bones, dry, dead bones. And it's a symbol of the Hebrew people. This is somewhere around 593 BC. The Babylonian Empire has swept through Jerusalem. The Hebrew people are living in exile. Everything that defined them as a nation is gone. The land, the temple, the monarchy, it's all gone. And they're saying to each other, "Our bones are dried up. Our hope is gone." They've been waiting, waiting, praying for God to rescue them, but nothing has changed. And it's here that God gives Ezekiel this vision. God says, "O my people, I will put my spirit within you, and you shall live. Then you shall know that I, the Lord, have spoken and will act." In each of these stories, the waiting isn't accidental. God is doing something in the waiting. First, when we wait, it strips away the outcomes that we have in mind. It strips away the expectations we have or the results that we think we need. Martha wanted Jesus to hurry up so he could heal her brother. The young man in the Toyota wants a job, and he wants it now. The Hebrew people wanted to be rescued before there was nothing left to save. But in each case, God let the waiting continue. Not because God isn't listening, but because God is often after something deeper. Because the second thing waiting does, and this is key, waiting creates the conditions for a different kind of miracle. Waiting creates the conditions for a more profound and deeper miracle. If Jesus had showed up and raised Lazarus on day two, that certainly would have been impressive, but people might have said, maybe he wasn't really dead. You know, maybe his soul was close enough, it just kind of popped back into his body and we're all good now. But resurrection on day four, that's undeniable. That's a miracle. The man in the Toyota could have gotten a job the first place he stopped. And if so, he could have explained it away. Oh, that's good timing. That's good luck. That's things lining up right. For the Hebrew people, when everything was gone, even hope itself was gone, and dry bones were the only thing that was left, that's when new life blooms in this vision, when restoration arrives, and that means the only possible explanation is that God was at work bringing life when it seemed impossible. You see, the delay isn't an obstacle. The delay is the whole setup. God is doing something so undeniable, so irreversible, that no one can deny God's power. Standing at the tomb of Lazarus, Jesus says, "Lazarus, come out." And he does. The one thing that everyone knew was impossible on day 4 has just happened. Not on day 1, not on day 2, not before the stone was rolled into place, not before the stench, but on day 4 when it was impossible. And that's not an accident. That's the whole point. So let's name what was happening in each of these stories. Jesus doesn't arrive late because he's lost track of time. God doesn't show up when the bones are dead and dry because he was busy elsewhere or he forgot about it. The delay is the method. God specializes in the irreversible, and God often arrives just late enough to prove it. God is after something so undeniable, so irreversible, that when it comes, the only words left for us to say are the same 3 words that Martha said to Jesus: "Lord, I believe." So here's the question: what in your life do you believe is irreversible? What in your life have you been waiting on for so long that you finally just said, "I'm giving up"? Or what in your life have you said, "It's time to just seal up and stop praying about that. It's not going to happen"? Because what the Bible makes clear is that may be exactly where God is at work. Not despite the waiting, but in the waiting, in this fertile waiting. Now, I don't want you to mishear me. I don't want you to think that I'm standing here this morning saying that if you wait long enough, you'll get exactly what you want. Because that's not what the Bible is saying at all. But it is saying something more radical. It's saying that God specializes in the irreversible. God shows up when we have no hope. God shows up when we think nothing is happening, or every chance of something good is happening has already passed. When all is lost, when the bones are dry, God can make things happen. And we might even call them miracles. In the story of Lazarus, obviously the resurrection, the new life, is a miracle. But Martha's declaration of faith, even in the darkest moment, "Lord, I believe," that's a resurrection unto itself. And frankly, that may be even the more profound miracle of this story. Now, as I said, we are not good at waiting. We want the cue, we want the music to start, but even in the waiting, something is happening. In the awkward silence before this sermon began, something was happening. In the tomb on day 4, something was happening. In the valley of dry bones, something was happening. And in your waiting, something is happening there too. You aren't forgotten. You aren't abandoned. God is with you. You may simply be waiting for the hand to come up, for the music to start, for the stone to roll away, for new life to come rushing in. So don't walk away. Don't give up thinking that this waiting means God is absent. Instead, know that this waiting, even in it, God is at work, and God may be preparing you for a miracle, even a more profound miracle than you want. God is with you in this abundant waiting. Amen.